This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
That song always gets me moving. I don't even know what that's from. Maybe someone can call and tell us. Welcome to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call here on WNRN, now broadcast all around the state. 91.9 here in the Charlottesville region, 103.1 in Richmond, 95.9 in Lexington, 95.1 in Harrisonburg, 89.9 in Lynchburg-Amherst. A slowly spreading virus, which is topical for today's show. Sean Decker, local author. And, you know, that's one of my first questions, Sean. Here on Sunday, 9/17. The station manager and I chatted over the phone about the best way to identify you as a guest. Sort of the proper work adjective that goes along with having you on the show today. You are an author, right? First book coming out this week.
Yes. Yep, first time.
And that's really the main thing for having you here today. But you were known for a lot of other things. So, you know, when you introduced yourself to people a year ago, you know, how did you do so?
Let's see. I would just basically introduce myself as a speaker / HIV educator / musician. But I'm kind of throwing that all away. I'm going to take this author thing and kind of run with it.
You're going to.
I think from now on out, Charlottesville's premier author, I think, is kind of how I'm going to introduce myself. Because that's the one thing Charlottesville's missing.
So fear into John Grisham.
John Grisham. Oh, yeah, that's right. Actually, I'm here. This is very premeditated. I'm actually here to issue a challenge to John Grisham. As a young upstart author, I'd like to challenge John Grisham to a reading anywhere in Charlottesville anytime he wants. But he can't read from a book that's been turned into a movie, because that's not fair to me.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? That might benefit you, because the movies all sucked.
Maybe.
Well, I shouldn't say that. Maybe not all of them. But it's got sort of the Stephen King virus. God, I keep using that word. You know why? Because Sean Decker is here today. His new book is called My Pet Virus. And I've been reading it for, you know, the last several days. And so the word is now concrete in my brain. Now, is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It's a good thing. It's a good thing when a title sticks in someone's mind and doesn't let go. So yeah, My Pet Virus. And actually, I've been in preparation for this, just so you wouldn't forget. I was having people come in as you were sleeping and whispering My Pet Virus, the true story of a rebel without a cure in your ear. So apparently that $20 an hour paid off well for me.
Good job. All right, so we do have Sean Decker as our guest today. He is a local boy. Now, you were born in Waynesboro, correct?
Yeah, I was born over the mountain in Waynesboro and lived there pretty much my first 23 years. And then once I had a chance, I moved over here to Charlottesville and have been here ever since. And that's been the last 8 years.
Well, we're always happy to have you. I was actually born in Charlottesville and moved away and then returned for because of its little black hole look, you know. When I came back to school, I realized that I was stuck here forever. All right, so let's talk about why you are here today, or why your book is actually in existence. My Pet Virus. I think most the average individual would recognize that viruses are not necessarily pets. What's the title? You know, lay it out for people who are clueless as to, you know, what we're talking about so far in the show.
The title for me, I'll tell you what it means to me and then tell you where I found that title and why it resonated. But for me, when I was diagnosed with HIV at age 11, I pretty much didn't speak about it for 10 years. And then at age 20, when my friends were going off to college and finding jobs and pursuing other things, I realized I needed to do something. And for the first time in my life, the thought of talking about HIV didn't freak me out. And so, so yeah, I wanted to put up a website, and I was trying to figure out a name for it, and I was listening to Nirvana, and one of their songs, Milk It, has the lyric, I own my own pet virus, I get to pet and name it. So I thought, my pet virus, like, that's perfect, because in a sense, it's, to me, what that says is, you know, I'm taking control over the virus. I'm not going to let it dictate how I feel. I'm not going to let it control. I'm not going to let my perceptions of other people's fears control what I'm going to do with my life. And so that really just kind of helped me hit the ground running when I decided I wanted to open up about HIV.
Now, you know, this program has devoted multiple hours to HIV and AIDS activism, et cetera, through a lot of the incredibly cool people and interesting groups here in town. But there are always folks out there who, I mean, you just said you had diagnosed with HIV at age 11. So you were fooling around with people at age 11?
Yeah.
I mean, how did you get that?
I was popular. I had that way about me. Women and men have always just been drawn to me. But now it's actually for me, I didn't contract HIV sexually or any really exciting way. I contracted it kind of the boring way, through blood product treatments. So
blood product treatments. Why would you have blood product treatments?
I was born with a blood clotting disorder called hemophilia, and anytime I would have a bleeding episode, and for me that meant nosebleeds, I would require a blood product treatment. And basically, people with hemophilia rely on concentrated blood plasma. It's not like a one person donor to donor or donor to patient blood transfusion. Blood product treatment is actually cold plasma from thousands of sources. So one injection of this treatment is kind of like being exposed to 10,000 people's blood. So, and you can get a sense of how risky that was before blood products were properly screened in the mid-1980s.
How did, I assume that you were diagnosed with hemophilia at a, by the way, folks, I did read the book, so I know the answers to some of these questions. You were diagnosed with hemophilia at a rather young age. How did that affect your life?
It affected my life, I guess, in certain ways that maybe I didn't understand at the time, because, you know, if you are born with hemophilia, you quickly understand that, you know, maybe some things, I know it's not, you know, people never like to hear that they're limited, but obviously I wasn't going to be, you know, quarterbacking the UVA football team at any point.
They could have used that.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe a hemophiliac quarterback would be an asset, because, I mean, that guy is going to do everything he can not to get sacked. So who knows? Maybe we're missing an untapped, you know, field of athletes. But, yeah, for me, I think hemophilia just meant, you know, persistent nosebleeds when I was a kid. But they weren't really that big of a deal, because if a nosebleed wouldn't stop on its own, I would just get a treatment and I'd be back to my, you know, normal childhood, quote unquote. I guess the thing that hemophilia did for me was it sort of granted me access to a whole different group of friends, like all the trips to the hospital. You know, my mom would take me, and my dad would stay home with my brother whenever I had to go to the hospital. But it really just kind of opened my eyes to, like, life and death issues, just being in a hospital at a young age and being surrounded by, you know, what other people are going through in there. So I think, in a way, hemophilia sort of grounded me and sort of taught me some important lessons about, you know, what life is all about.
So you're diagnosed at age 11. Hemophilia moves on to HIV.
Or HIV moves on to AIDS. Hemophilia pretty much led to HIV. And yeah, I mean, just so much of the community were being infected with HIV that my parents were kind of, you know, they kind of knew that I was probably infected but didn't get me tested until the sixth grade.
Right. At age 11,
mm-hmm.
You didn't really know that you had AIDS or whether or not you had AIDS, but everyone just assumed it, because for so many people, HIV is AIDS.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know, when I was initially told, just because, you know, my parents were still learning, you know, the ins and outs about it, I was told I had AIDS, and that freaked me out, because that's kind of, you know, what was on the news all the time, and AIDS pretty much equaled death. And even at 11, I kind of understood, like, if you're told you have AIDS, you're basically being told you're going to die soon. But once it was explained to me, and we all kind of were learning, you know, on the spot, that that I was HIV positive. I didn't have an AIDS diagnosis yet. And to me, that really, you know, was good news, hearing I was HIV positive, ironically, because it felt like it was a step up from an AIDS diagnosis.
You said HIV positive. One of the more interesting things that I discovered from reading the book and visiting the website is your personal lingo that you have created for this. Talk about that for a minute.
Well, one of the things when I put up my website, My Pet Virus, about 10 years ago, I was really struggling to write these stories about my experiences with HIV, and mainly because I got tired of writing as someone with HIV, as someone with HIV, as somebody living with HIV. And so I was like, there's got to be something else. And so the first word of this collection of titles I've created was positoid. And it just kind of rolled off my fingers, and I was like, that's it. That's what I'm going to use. So instead of as somebody living with HIV, it'd be like, my positoid lifestyle means, you know, I have to do this or I have to do that. And so, and then that kind of went on, that kind of, translated to hemophilia. It was like, hemophiliac. A lot of people with hemophilia don't like to be called hemophiliacs because, it's just so, medical. It's like you're being identified by your medical condition. But for me, I've never minded. So I just thought, I'll throw one out there to the hemophilia community. So I came up with thin blood. And I don't know. I don't think a lot of people know. I think when this book comes out, the hemophilia community is going to be aware. And, we'll see how that flies. I'm not sure.
Now, one of the things I think that, by the way, we are talking to Sean Decker, a local author, who is a positoid in terms of HIV and AIDS and hemophilia. That's quite a collection itself you have going. But I think for a lot of people who have not read the book or visited the website or any of these other things, this can be a cautious subject to talk about. And you have gained notoriety by just having a witty sense of humor, almost a dark sense of humor about the topic. So every once in a while, even so far, just in our little 12-minute chat, I find myself laughing at things, and I'm like, should I be laughing at that or not? Do you run into that a lot?
Yeah. I mean, my wife partner, Gwen, and I, we speak at college campuses, and what we pretty much, in the first minute, my goal was to get people to laugh. And pretty much I have to do that by kind of offering myself up, as, an object that they can find humor in. And a lot of it's like self-deprecating humor, but it's, I kind of feel like if anybody's going to listen to this topic, they kind of need to loosen up. And for me, I guess it's because I've been diagnosed, over 20 years. It's just not hard for me to talk about. It's not hard for me to laugh about it. And I kind of want to bring everybody up to sort of where I'm at. And it's kind of interesting. People, you kind of see them laughing, and then you kind of see them trying to stop laugh because they feel guilty. But you'd mentioned earlier about my collection of medical conditions. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, do you collect anything at all?
I do, but I don't know that I would qualify any of them as medical conditions.
What is it? I'm just kind of curious.
Well, you know what? When I went home recently, I went home back to visit my parents over the summer, and they were redoing my bedroom. Mm. And all my comic books that I had purchased back when I was a kid were now about to be set outside in one of those steel storage boxes where it was, and I live on the bay or grew up on the bay where it was going to be, 95% humid. And so I was like, what are you doing? That's my, that's my retirement fund you're about to ruin. So I brought those back to Charlottesville and went online to see how much they were all worth. So I guess you could call comic books one of my older collections. I haven't bought anything in a long, long time.
Did you have any gold in that collection?
I actually did have a piece of gold in that collection. Mm. And I was like, holy crap.
Wow. So would you be willing to trade one item in your collection for one item in my collection?
I have to say that I would not.
Okay.
So part of this is a learning process, you know. When you use, it's okay to laugh at some things, but there are certain words that people don't think about, like collection, that really aren't the best phrase to use. I'm assuming that was your point in that, by asking me that question.
No, I kind of wanted to see if you'd trade up. I'm a little bogged down over here. So I'm going to have to hire that guy again for $20 and have him whisper, give Sean your comic
books. No, thank you. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. If you have questions or comments for Sean Decker, born in Waynesboro, currently living in Charlottesville. New book, first book, about to come out this week, right? What day is it released?
Yeah, it's released on Thursday, but we're having a book event kick off at Barnes & Noble at 7 on Tuesday, and the book will be available there.
Okay, cool. And you also have a history of writing already, right? I mean, between your website, but there have also been, you've been writing a weekly or monthly articles for
Paws.
A magazine.
Yeah, for Paws magazine.
I love that comment in the book, by the way, about Paws is not P-A-W-S
yeah.
for those cat lovers, but P-O-Z.
Yeah, that's like a you know, if you're a cat lover and you hear that somebody writes for Paws magazine and you think it's Paws magazine, and I mean that's a pretty far, you know, leap from the excitement enthusiasm to like, oh, it's an HIV/AIDS rag, you know. So I kind of ran into that when I started writing for them. But I mean pretty much like within a year after I put up my website, you know, I'd contacted the magazine and they just really liked what I was doing, and so I got the opportunity to write a column for a national magazine before I really understood the art of writing. But I think that's one thing that they liked, because they had these, you know, New York City writers who were HIV positive, all the columnists at that time, and still who write for Paws or HIV positive themselves. So they had these people who really had a good way with words, and then I was kind of like this raw scab, this young, you know, kid from rural Virginia, you know, just kind of putting it all out there. So I think they kind of liked that, but fortunately I was, you know, when your writing is appearing aside other columnists, it really forces you to sort of, you know, pick up your game a little bit.
Yeah.
So, I kind of learned how to write in a national magazine. I think that's one of the strangest things about, you know, my professional life. Not many people have that, you know, opportunity.
All right, let's take our first call. We got Bailey from Stanton. Hey, Bailey.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What's going on?
Oh, not too much.
Hang on one second.
I actually kind of know Sean through growing up in Waynesboro, and I was going to ask him whether or not the city of Waynesboro has been receptive to his book, and have they covered it at all in their media? Because all the searches I've done, I haven't found anything.
All right.
He's Virginian.
All right, so Sean, has City of Waynesboro done anything in terms of media for your book?
Hi, Bailey. The City of Waynesboro, I'm not sure if they've been directly contacted. I'm pretty sure they know that it's coming out now. And
through your mother, right? According to your book, your mother is quite the persistent individual.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And she still lived in Waynesboro. I mean, just through the force of nature that is Pam Decker, they would have to cover it somehow. But I don't know. Maybe they're saving like a big story for Thursday when it comes out. Hold out hope, Bailey, maybe. But recently, The Hook did a cover story on the book. And one of the interesting things in the book was they had contacted a gentleman who was the superintendent when I was, you know, expelled, kicked out of school. And he kind of denied that it happened. So I think there's some people in Waynesboro who are going to be pretty uncomfortable with this book being out there and being accessible nationally. So it should be interesting. I've had a lot of support from Waynesboro, but I've also, you know, there are some people who would rather me not be talking about Waynesboro and my experience when I was 11 there.
Hey, Bailey, thanks for getting us started with the calls.
Yeah, thanks. I'll see you on
Tuesday,
Sean.
Okay, looking forward to it.
All right, 11:20 here on the wake-up call. Feel free to dial us up. Make a comment. Ask Sean Decker a question. Sean's here talking about his new book, My Pet Virus. You can meet Sean and pick up the book Tuesday at the Charlottesville Barnes & Noble, or buy it at your other bookstore if you're listening in some other part of the world starting Thursday. Let me tell you the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Sunny today, highs 80 to 85. Fair with a little fog tonight, lows 55 to 60. Mostly sunny tomorrow, highs 85 to 90. It's a little cloudy in the valley in 64. Fair in Lynchburg and 69. Fair in Charlottesville and 67.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And let's take a moment and thank our friends at Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. Blue Ridge Graphics at the corner of Meade Avenue and East High Street in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear, plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. And you know what? We also got friends elsewhere in the radio world. It's because of friends like Barbara Clement Jones, Dewey Keaton, and Gene McCusker that the Wake Up Call and 91.9 are here, because they supported it in the spring fund drive. We also want to thank other underwriters like Charlottesville Ice Park and the Student Bookstore. So stay tuned to tell a friend about our upcoming fall fund drive and keep on listening to WNRN. Now back to the action with Sean Decker. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. Catherine is here to answer the phone, patch you through, and play games.
Grisham, where are you, Grisham?
Yeah, if Sean Grisham is listening, or even his agent, who I spoke to once before and got rejected wholeheartedly about him appearing on the show, feel free to dial us up and take on the challenge. If we don't hear from you during the hour, we'll assume you're wussies. Sean, you mentioned being expelled from school in Waynesboro. Get into that a little bit. You know, because some of the parts you mentioned about Waynesboro not liking parts of the book, and while you got a lot of support, there was also a lot, or at least a little, against you. I believe you had some family, some friends whose parents didn't let you play with them anymore. You lost a girlfriend or maybe more over HIV, and you got kicked out of school during your sixth grade year. Talk about that and how it sort of emotionally affects an 11-year-old.
Yeah, I think I was a little distracted by sort of the fears of my own mortality. So when all the political wrangling and kind of the fear about my HIV status, you know, led to my expulsion from sixth grade, my parents kind of took on that battle as I was dealing with this internal battle of wondering, you know, how long I had to live and whether I could kiss somebody at some point, or whether, you know, I could get married or have a relationship. So yeah, I think I was a little distracted, but I definitely noticed on my level with my peers when things weren't the same. And you know, a lot of that was being, you know, filtered down by parents who were just concerned, who didn't know how HIV was transmitted. And I remember, like, in that first year after I was diagnosed, you know, I had a friend whose parents wouldn't let me spend the night at his house anymore. And my mom, you know, would try to explain that, you know, HIV wasn't transmitted, you know, through casual contact or transmitted via Nintendo or, you know, whatever else we were doing. And, you know, just I couldn't understand how the message couldn't get through, like how somebody could have the facts, you know, about how it's transmitted and still have the fear. And I think some of that, too, is, you know, people were afraid that, you know, maybe if word got around that this kid was at their house, they were worried that people would think that, you know, maybe they were at risk and then people wouldn't want to be around them.
That was 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And we're 20 years later and you still suffer the same problems, right?
Not to that extent. I'm it's such a different experience now, because then I was a kid, and so my perceptions of what was going on were completely different, and I wasn't talking about HIV, so I couldn't firsthand tell somebody that they shouldn't be scared, or I couldn't tell them anything medically about myself. Now, on the other side of that coin, I'm an adult. I have no problems talking about HIV. In fact, when I'm meeting a lot of new people, they're usually meeting me because, I'm there to educate about HIV. So I found that people can be people are pretty understanding to this day, because I think that that fear of transmitting HIV through a hug or a handshake or a cough isn't as pervasive as it was 20 years ago.
Well, you're always welcome to share a 40-ounce Red Bull with me.
Nice.
Sean Decker here. Dial us up. Ask him a question. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. Can I use the word collection again?
Yes.
Sean has a... suffer seems the wrong word to use, though, because I get the impression that, at least today, you're not suffering, although... as from reading all the book and the website, fatigue and several other things do come into play, but you are an owner of your viruses of hemophilia and AIDS and HIV, and doing your best to educate others while dealing with the side effects of those. So dial up and ask Sean a question if you have the urge. I have plenty here on my own sheet of paper. You mentioned somewhere, I guess when you were 21, of celebrating your 10th anniversary of being diagnosed with HIV. Part of that because you were only given a couple years to live, correct?
Yeah. And I think, too, in the 10 years that I didn't talk about it, always assumed, I had a few years to live. And then when I sort of splashed it out there at 20, and when my 21st birthday rolled around shortly thereafter, I just thought, maybe I have more than that 3 years. Having half my life with HIV, under my belt, I felt confident. Maybe I can live to 40, and that sort of became my new thing. I kind of felt half my life was probably over. I feel differently today as I'm 31, obviously. I got to change that around a little bit. but yeah. So, and not only was I celebrating, the legal right to drink alcohol, which my brother took me to Myrtle Beach and helped me usher that milestone in, I was also celebrating that 10-year anniversary. And
how do you do that? How do you celebrate 10 years of being diagnosed with HIV?
Well, you have your brother take you to a strip club, and and you end up throwing up in somebody's garden. It's not unlike celebrating a 21st birthday, actually.
Mm. Now, your brother, older brother, Kip, played a key part of, I guess, making it from early years of hemophilia through a much later part in life.
Yeah, Kip, 2 years older than me. He was always a big guy growing up, and he just kind of looked out for me in the neighborhood, and people knowing that Kip was around were probably less inclined to try to start a fight with me.
One of the things that I found interesting, and then we touched on just a little bit earlier in the show, is for a lot of people, HIV and AIDS are gay. It's the gay male disease. And although we've done shows in the past on the Wake Up Call about how AIDS is unfortunately dramatically spreading into other segments of society, the heterosexual white male is not really considered part of that. But you write about working for PAWS magazine and several other, where you're almost the poster child. And you mentioned being on a committee for a group here in Charlottesville, where you're sort of the mascot for that group. What's that like? Do you have any feelings of not fitting in with the groups?
Not so much. I mean, when I started speaking out, I had no problems kind of being like the poster boy for young straight people with HIV. And really, it was the gay community within the AIDS community that sort of took me under their wing and really taught me how to be a good educator. And so, you know, I hadn't really been around a lot of people who identified as gay, though, you know, I'm quite sure that, you know, I had friends who were. And, yeah, so to me, it was just this cultural awakening. And I was kind of glad that by the time I started speaking out at 20, any of the homophobia that is just part of the, you know, American experience of youth, because you know calling someone gay or calling someone a fag is an insult in our culture, so I think that can affect young people, and so that's something you don't want to be. So I was kind of glad when I started speaking out at 20, I was already, you know, well past, you know, thinking that, you know, every gay person on the planet is going to want to have sex with me, because I think that's a very, like, you know, egocentric, yeah, I think homophobia is very egocentric. It's thinking that every other, you know, every gay man on the planet wants to have sex with you. And I'm sorry, you know, sports fan or NASCAR fan or whoever is having issues, Wall Street guy, people aren't that interested in having sex with you. So get over that, and then maybe you'll be less worried about what people are doing in their bedrooms.
Why did it take until 20? I mean, was it just that you were graduated from high school and had nothing else to do?
That's a big part of it. And I think too, like a big part of it was, I think I needed like that obvious, okay, you've been living with this for 10 years. You're not going anywhere soon. You better figure out what you want to do with yourself. So I just needed the confidence that I wasn't going to die soon. And I didn't really want to talk about it earlier because at any point before that, I wouldn't know how to address my own mortality. If somebody, if I was speaking about it at 15 and somebody's like, are you afraid of dying? I'd probably be like, well, maybe a little bit, but, we're all going to die at some point. But at 20, it was kind of like, are you afraid of dying? Well, I've lived with this for 10 years. If I was afraid of dying still at this point, I'd need to get over it, wouldn't I? So yeah, I think I just needed that. I needed all those years, to kind of, mull it over in my own mind before I was ready to sort of spill it out there.
11:32 here in the Wake Up Call, as we talk with Sean Decker, a local boy, local man, 31 years old.
Local boy done good.
an author, a book coming out this week, My Pet Virus, as he talks about life with hemophilia, with AIDS, with HIV, and all the good and bad things that go along with that. We want to thank Five Guys Burgers and Fries for helping us put this program on the air today. They are Siegel's Reader's Choice for burgers for 4 years running. Five Guys serves America's standard fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. and open until 10 on Fridays and Saturdays. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in the Hollymead Town Center and now on the downtown mall here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's fiveguys.com. And then there's mypetvirus.com. Which is where you can find out more about Sean. And, for those people who might want to wait for your book to be in the library, they can go to mypetvirus.com and read some of your articles at PAWS, correct?
Yeah.
So they can get a sense of the style of the writing.
Yeah, definitely. There's an excerpt of the book right now on POZ.com. And so I've been kind of directing people there before the publication date just so they can kind of see what they're in for and see if they're interested. But I've had like a really good response to the book, having it out there for reviews and everything. And I think one of the things, I wasn't so worried about it because I kind of, through speaking with Gwen, I've seen that people really respond well to humor, and it really opens them up. But I think in a book form, you have even more free rein with that. And so I was able to take things much further than I can, in speaking with people. And so I think maybe there was a little trepidation about how that was going to be received, and I'm just so glad that people kind of get it. And I think it's a welcome relief for a lot of people, because one of the things when I was trying to find representation for the book, one of the big drawbacks was people just weren't interested. They wouldn't even open their eyes to anything that was HIV or AIDS, because it doesn't sell very well. So I was glad when I found somebody who sort of got that this isn't an AIDS book per se. This is another memoir about an American experience that a lot of people don't know much about. People don't know what it's like to go through puberty with HIV. So I'm kind of glad that I've been able to share that unique situation.
Man, all these questions just popped into my head at one time, and I want to forget them. Tell me why you think that. What makes you say that? You just have a greater aspect. There's more that you can do in writing rather than speaking.
There's more that I can do because in speaking, Gwen and I really focus on what it was that made us both become educators. For me, it was, my infection. It was, coming to terms with, my own feelings about being positive. For Gwen, it was, somebody came and spoke to her and her friends at college. And it was somebody living with HIV, and that's sort of what opened her eyes to it. So we just really kind of keep it centered around how we both came to HIV and how we met each other through that work. So in terms of, my childhood, I don't really talk too much about that because it's kind of like, skim over hemophilia, fast forward to HIV, and fast forward even through, what it was like in high school and things like that. So in writing, I could delve into a lot of those time periods in my life that I don't get the opportunity to with speaking. And so that opened up a whole new array of jokes that were untapped.
By the way, is Gwen around today? I mean, she's not here in the studio with you, because I'm assuming, because this is your book, not necessarily her book, although she plays a key part in it. But is she around? Is she probably listening?
Yeah. Hey, babe.
She's welcome to call in as well. I'd love to hear from Gwen, because it is a key part of your life.
Yeah. Yeah. Gwen is, the key part of my life. And she was very instrumental in getting me to write this book. I mean, she was hounding me a couple years before I even started writing. I owe so much of my happiness and in my adult life to Gwen.
Well, we'd love to hear from Gwen, and I promise not to turn it into the Gwen show, or even the Gwen and Sean show. Will remain the Sean Decker All About My Book show, but we'd love to hear from Gwen. Feel free to call in 979-0919. We have somebody who chooses to remain anonymous on the toll-free line, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Caller?
Hello.
Yes, you're on.
Hi. I've had three people from my high school that have died from the AIDS virus. I don't think that the topic of AIDS is complete without where the virus came from. And I don't know if this is gone through in your book, but the encroachment of people into rainforests and forest in general around the earth.
Well, let me we'll see what Sean has to say about that and see exactly whether that does play a part in it.
Certainly is not complete without that the virus and where it actually came from. It could open up a separate and important to people to understand where the virus came from, and it's just important. It needs to be known.
All right. Well, let me ask Sean. Thanks for calling. Hey, Sean, do you get into that much?
I don't get into it much in my book because, there are people who write specifically about that topic, and so there are things out there that sort of explore the origin of HIV. And it's also like a very touchy topic because there are, you know, there's a significant portion of the African American community who think that HIV was government made to kind of wipe out, you know, communities of color. And so, yeah, and I get a lot from people who's, you know, people ask me all the time, where did HIV come from? Where did HIV come from? And yeah, I just, I haven't researched it too much because I try to focus on, you know, getting people to just be aware that they are at risk for this, and they're at risk for other sexually transmitted infections as well. So pretty much in what I've been doing, the last 6 years and speaking to college students, I haven't delved too much into that. I don't have, you know, I don't have much to say on that.
All right, 11:40 here in the Wake Up Call as we talk with local author Sean Decker about his new book, My Pet Virus. We'll be right back, and it looks like Gwen's called in, so hang tight, Gwen.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Guess what? Today's guest, Sean Decker, is on the cover of The Hook, sharing his humor in HIV and AIDS. The president of Iran visited town, and he shut down Monticello. How did that happen? And there's an interview with legendary Allman Brothers guitarist Warren Haynes. The Hook, for both positoids and negatoids. We also want to take a moment to thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. They're proud to support WNRN and community projects around the state. For back to school, Blue Ridge has over 170 styles of outdoor footwear, from sandals for the warm days to trail-friendly running shoes and for hikers. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. They're at Wintergreen and at BRMS.com.
I just wanted to add one thing to the last caller's comment and question. I do think that environmentally, one of the dangers in our destruction of the rainforest is, you know, where HIV originated from, I'm not sure. But I think one of the dangers is, you know, in doing that, are we lessening the chances of finding a cure, not just for HIV, but for other things, because, you know, resources are being pounded. And I think, I don't think we fully understand sort of each time we destroy something forever, what that's preventing us from accomplishing in the future.
Good call. We have Gwen on the phone. Hey, Gwen.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks so much for calling in.
No problem.
Yay, Gwen.
you're getting the thumbs up from the guests.
Yeah, you know if John Grisham calls in to accept my challenge to a reading, that we're going to have to cut you.
If you didn't hear the first part of the show with the challenge out to John Grisham, www.seavillepodcast.com. Well, the whole hour will be up there shortly after we finish at noon. But there has been a challenge sent out to John Grisham for a reading of written materials between Sean and John to see who the better Charlottesville author is.
It works in rap, so I'm trying to.
Rap.
Yeah, the young rapper comes out and starts, you know, calling out
Instead of
Eminem.
8 Mile, we can call it 29 Mile or something.
Gwen, factor 8 Mile.
Gwen, I want to ask you a question or two. Sean says that you prompted him to write the book.
Well, I think that's a slight overstatement, but I will say that I did harp on him for a long time about it. I just knew that. His writing was so good and so interesting and so funny, and so many people responded to it through the magazine and just through the website. And I knew he had all these incredible stories that he kind of never talked about. So I just thought it would be really cool. And he had mentioned writing the book, and I said, yeah, you should do it, you should do it. But one little thing about Sean is that he's got a lot of great ideas, but sometimes he just needs a little push or a big push to go through with it. The other thing I want to say about me pushing him to write the book is that although I pushed him for a couple of years to write the book, he actually didn't start writing the book because of me. And maybe you can ask him who made him start writing the book.
And who started to make you write the book there, Sean?
Well, I'll answer that for sure. But yeah, what Gwen said is right. You know, I thought about writing a book before, but earlier when I said, you know, she was the sole reason, you know, I've been married a couple years. I got to say whatever I can, you know, in the hopes of getting lucky. So, yeah, Gwen had been, you know, telling me to write for a while. And then, I'd gotten, you know, a message online through a friend that, John Berendt, said I need to start writing my book. And he's the author of Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil and has been kind of a champion of My Pet Virus from the beginning. And so, you know, I came into the living room and told Gwen, oh, my God, you know, the author of Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil thinks that I should write my life story. And Gwen's kind of like, yeah, okay. I tell you for 2 years and then you get an email right. And you're up there writing for 3 hours.
Actually get you moving.
Yeah.
Gwen, I want to ask you a question, and because this is part of the book, I don't feel like I'm turning this into the Gwen show. You know, but you talk about this. You go out as a couple of AIDS educators, and I'm sure both from reading Sean's book, and it just makes common sense that a lot of the questions would be, how does someone without HIV and AIDS, falling in love with someone with HIV is one thing, but actually committing yourself to that person and the challenges that go with it seem to be something else entirely. And how did you make that choice personally, and how did you two work it out as a couple?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of college students and a lot of people have that question. And I don't mean to be short about it, but kind of how I feel about it is that I didn't really choose to fall in love with Sean. I actually, when I realized that we were having feelings for each other outside of friendship, I kind of fought those feelings because I knew being in a relationship with someone who had HIV would obviously complicate the matter to whatever degree. And so I really didn't want to get myself involved in that, but I feel like, I don't know, kind of that I didn't have a choice. I really just liked this person a lot, realized that he liked me a lot, and at some point had to kind of give the relationship a chance because I felt like the benefit of the relationship far outweighed any negative to the relationship. So, yeah, when we first got involved, I obviously wasn't thinking about the long term. I just knew that I liked this person and was going to give the relationship a chance. And I was very fortunate when I met Sean because I was really educated about HIV before I met him, so I knew about transmission, and I actually met couples who one partner was positive and the other was not, so it wasn't such a foreign concept to me, although again, not something I'd ever planned on in my life or wanted for my life, but once I was in the relationship and realized, I guess, I don't know, this cheesy, cliche, romantic thing that this was the person for me, I there was no real option for me to kind of get out of it because, like I said, any negative to the relationship really was far outweighed by just being with the person that I loved. And I couldn't imagine knowing this person was out there and saying, you know, no, I'm not going to be with him because of a medical condition. I just knew that we were going to have to make it work. And really, my being an educator prior to meeting Sean was kind of a key fact, I think, in that working out so easily because I was really educated and Sean was educated and our lines of communication were always very open. Whenever either of us had a concern about HIV, you know, we would talk to each other about it. And I think that's been a key element in our relationship working so well.
And also, too, we talked a lot about sex before we ever engaged in it, like, as we were becoming fast friends. And, yeah, like, you know, we were definitely developing a very serious emotional connection. But being educators, we were able to talk about, you know, why condoms failed and just the issue of sex. And I think most young couples who are getting together on that sort of find themselves, you know, maybe talking about it after the fact, if ever talking about it. So in a way, My Pet Virus definitely allowed the communications that I think are essential to a relationship to open up really at their natural time.
Hey, Gwen, thanks so much for calling in and adding that to the conversation today. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks a lot. I'll see you in a little bit, Sean.
Okay. Yeah, get some chicken nuggets ready for me.
All right, 11:49 here in the Wake Up Call as we talk about Sean Decker's new book, My Pet Virus, coming out this week. Hey, Sean, is this your first local bit of news? You had the Hook article this week. Right?
Yeah.
That came out on Thursday,
yeah.
Right? Have you done any other TV or radio around here?
I haven't. I'm kind of worried that chicken nugget comment's going to get me in trouble now. But I was very fortunate in that on Thursday, USA Today reviewed My Pet Virus favorably. And, yeah, I put that whole review up on mypetvirus.com because I was like, oh, my God. So yeah, and it's currently reviewed in Entertainment Weekly, which came out on Friday and is going to be out through Thursday. So
the national guys are beating you to the local crew.
No, I think the Hook has definitely sort of been, pounding the drums for a while now.
Well, they know all the good stuff because they underwrite this program as well.
Yeah. So I've been like, since I moved to Charlottesville, like, with Seville and the Hook, like, they've both been so supportive, and right after Gwen and I started dating, there was a big story, in the paper about it. And yeah, like, so I was kind of welcomed, into the local community by the local media. So I've always been very fortunate in that. That's always been an avenue to kind of get the message out, and it's great when a community feels like that's sort of an important thing to do, and also too when I first started speaking out, when I was still living at home with my parents, the paper in Waynesboro would do articles about kind of what I was doing, and so yeah, the News Virginian was pretty supportive as well.
All right, we're running out of time here, so if you got a question or a comment, now is your chance. 11:51 here on the Wake Up Call with Sean Decker, local boy turning into a national author and making challenges. I do want to thank 45fix.com for their support today. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting to decks and siding, that's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And don't be going anywhere at noon either, because George Bell is up for Les Temps Purdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Chaka Khan, no Mariah Carey. And he refuses to play anything by the artist formerly known as Prince. But you will hear Pet Shop Boys, Husker Du, and The Mission. And he likes requests. Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN.
You think he's going to play some Depeche Mode?
I don't know, George. You got a request for Depeche Mode early in the hour. Yeah, that's right. You, in your book, you comment numerous times on how you love Depeche Mode.
I'll see what I can do.
Right? Oh, excellent. Excellent. Yeah, right, you know, it was my dying wish to meet that band.
A little people
wouldn't kill you.
We got Jennifer from Charlottesville. Hey, Jennifer.
Hi. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we can hear you fine. Sean, can you hear Jennifer?
I can.
I'm one of the Poker Wives. And I have a question, actually, about the circumstances that led to your school expulsion. That was mentioned briefly, and I don't want to backtrack here in your narrative. But can you talk more about how the expulsion happened over in Waynesboro, and to what extent you were involved in that conversation?
Yes. Thanks for the call, and hello. How that all went down, as I said earlier, like, from my perspective then, I didn't know what was going on. I didn't really find out the details until I started educating at 20, and I could, like, talk to my parents openly about everything. And how it went down was I'd been missing a lot of school in sixth grade, and so the school really wanted to know what was going on. And at that point, I hadn't been tested for HIV, but my parents knew for a couple years that I was probably infected. And so they got me tested, the test came back positive, and after the school had written a letter demanding an explanation for all my absences, I was getting strep throat, having these bouts of having, a week where I couldn't go to school. So what had happened, my mom told my sixth grade teacher, and my sixth grade teacher had concerns, so she went to her doctor, and her doctor at the time was the mayor of Waynesboro, and so... From my understanding, through my parents' explanation, is that a couple days after my mom had had visited my teacher to tell her, that was the day that I was asked to gather my belongings in the middle of class and go to the office to wait for my mother, who picked me up, and that was my last day of sixth grade. So I missed the last month of school, but apparently, to some people at the time, I wasn't kicked out of school. So maybe the proper thing is not saying I was expelled, but I was asked to leave, but never invited to return. So yeah, maybe that's how some people view it, but it's a little different when it's happening to your family. I guess you have a different perspective on it. But yeah, I mean, I'm not too hard on that time period, because for me, it's, people just didn't really know how it was transmitted. My problem is when it's explained by doctors, what the deal is, and then at that point, you're still refusing to accept somebody back. That's kind of the issue. So it was, it was a pretty traumatic time, more so for my parents than me, because they were dealing with the fact that their son may not be around much longer, but they were also dealing with some people in the community who would rather us not be a part of the community anymore after my HIV became involved.
Hey, thanks for the call, Jennifer. I do want to take a moment and remind you are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM, Sweetbriar, Amherst, and Lynchburg. Sean, we only got a few minutes left, and I want
to... I wanted to say one more thing. I'd mentioned the bookstore event at Barnes & Noble on Tuesday at 7. Gwen and I are also going to be speaking at UVA on Wednesday at 7 p.m. in the Chemistry Auditorium. So yeah, I just wanted to get that out there since Gwen called in and we had a chance to speak. We're going to be speaking on Wednesday.
That's one of the things that we really haven't gotten into is that one of your, can't even think of the right word now, but you spent a long time after you were identified as being HIV positive with AIDS as being drug-free. And you sort of made that a big part of your life. That's how, I guess, one of the ways that you wanted to be known was mm-hmm. that, yeah, okay, I have this, but I'm not taking any drugs for it.
Yeah.
Talk about the reasons for that.
Yeah, for me, not going on HIV drugs, I just didn't, when I first heard about them.
Machismo?
Machismo. It was a little machismo. It was also, too, I'd been diagnosed 2 years when I first heard about AZT, which was the first single drug that was developed to combat HIV. And I just remember my mom was getting pressure from my doctor for me to take it. I had simple questions. Is this going to cure me? Well, no. Is it going to make me feel better? Well, no. It actually might make you feel worse for a little while. And that was all I needed to hear. It's not going to, it's not going to cure me. I'm not going to feel any better, so why take it? When I started speaking out at age 20, they had developed other drugs, and they found that they were working well in combination with one another. But I still had my mindset that I didn't want to take them. And I think my unique history with treatments with hemophilia, like I've seen sort of the dark side of potential side effects, which in some cases can result in death. So I kind of felt like, well, I deal with fatigue, I deal with this and that, limited energy levels, but I kind of work with it well. And I just didn't want to alter my pattern. And so for me, it was important not to go on HIV meds. But in 1999, when I was diagnosed with AIDS, I really didn't have a choice. And so I started, and I was dealing with the side effects, but really, I was fortunate that I got as sick as I did in 1999, and that didn't happen in 1991, because I wouldn't have been around if I hadn't had access to combination therapy.
Well, this is one of those shows that I am always sorry to wrap up, because we could have gone for another several more hours. I'm not nowhere near halfway through my list of questions. I'm not stretching for anything. I know that we'd have more calls if we continued on.
Well, I'll come back anytime, Rick, and thanks so much for having me.
You're always welcome. You're going to a variety of cities, right? Yes. You're going to Philadelphia. Why are you going to Albuquerque, New Mexico? I mean, Washington, New York, Philadelphia, San Francisco, Albuquerque, New Mexico?
Yeah, Albuquerque is a safe haven for positoids, and so I'm going to go there. No, actually, Gwen and I are speaking there at the University of New Mexico, and so I told the publisher, I was like, set up a book event there. We're already going to be there, and no knock on Albuquerque, but yeah, that's what's going on.
It's a beautiful place. I have visited there. I love it. It just seemed odd in the other mix.
It's like New York City, L.A., you know,
Springfield,
D.C., Gomorrah.
Visit the Simpsons in Springfield. All right, it is time to turn it over to George Bell. Sean Decker, thank you so much for coming in. Tuesday night at 7 o'clock at the local Barnes & Noble, Wednesday night at the Chemistry Auditorium here in UVA, the book nationally released Thursday.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, and good luck, Mr. Positoid.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@aol.com or at wnrn.rlc.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.